Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. China threatens to retaliate against clothing manufacturers over forced labor. The European Union votes to raise tariffs on China's electric vehicles. And humanitarian aid workers are military targets. First, China threatens to retaliate against clothing manufacturers over forced labor. Are you wearing a Calvin Klein jacket or a Tommy Hilfiger outfit? That could be a political statement. It indicates that you oppose China's repression of the Uyghurs, since the parent company of those clothing brands, PVH, has refused to buy the cotton for its garments from Xinjiang province as a protest against forced labor there. Xinjiang accounts for about 90% of all the cotton grown in China. China has threatened retaliation, arguing, seriously, that it's discrimination. Its commerce ministry has given the company 30 days to respond to that charge. Beijing could sanction PVH's suppliers and factories in China. This case has broader implications. It's part of a consistent pattern in which the Chinese authorities try to leverage the dependence of international businesses on China to force their adherence to Chinese human rights practices. The European Union is caught up in just such a situation over tariffs on Chinese electric vehicle imports, my next subject. Volkswagen in China is a specific case in point. As the New York Times reports, quote, the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China, a group with lawmakers from at least 22 countries and the European Union, issued a statement calling for Volkswagen to withdraw from Xinjiang. Volkswagen is Germany's largest automaker and has a 190-employee joint venture in Xinjiang with a car maker owned by the Shanghai Municipal Government. Chinese state-owned enterprises, like Volkswagen's partner, follow Beijing's lead in opposing any withdrawal from Xinjiang. The alliance issued its statement after Dr. Adrian Zenz, the director in China Studies at the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, issued a report that cited a leaked audit that Volkswagen had commissioned. His report said the automaker had failed to properly investigate accusations of complicity in Xinjiang's coercive policies toward Uyghurs. Volkswagen has said that the audit shows it behaved appropriately and was not building cars in Xinjiang, where workers prepare cars for delivery to dealerships. A footnote here. Under U.S. law, the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act of 2021, a variety of goods that originate in Xinjiang are banned from being imported. Most recently, the ban was extended to a Chinese artificial sweetener company and a steel manufacturer. Robert Silvers, Undersecretary of Homeland Security for Policy, said, quote, no sector is off limits. We will continue to identify entities across industries in China and hold accountable those who seek to profit from exploitation and abuse. The European Union votes to raise tariffs on China's electric vehicles. After months of debate within the EU, the vote to raise tariffs passed, reflecting disagreement about how to confront China's competition, but also a consensus that China unfairly subsidizes its auto exports. 10 countries voted for the higher tariffs, 5 voted against, and 12 abstained. The tariffs on Chinese EVs, which take effect on October 31st and will last for 5 years, go as high as 45%. That's considerably lower than the US and Canadian 100% tariffs on Chinese EVs. Both Beijing and the EU agreed to continue negotiations, reflecting their huge commercial relationship. China is the EU's second most important trade partner after the US, with a total trade in 2023 valued at $815 billion. One observer commented that the vote sends, quote, a signal that there's an emerging consensus in Europe that stronger pushback against China on the economic front is needed, unquote. As an example of the pushback, consider what Denmark's Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said, quote, I don't think it would be possible for Russia to have a full-scale war for more than 2.5 years now without help from China. We cannot continue a situation where China helps Russia in a war in Europe without consequences. They have to be held responsible for their activities. You cannot, on the one hand, let Russia attack another European country and continue like nothing has happened, she said. We have tried with all actors on the global scene to have good cooperation. We tried it with Russia, buying their gas and their oil, Fredrickson said. I think we have to try doing the same with China, have normal cooperation between partners on different aspects and topics. We cannot allow ourselves to be naive. You cannot go back to the situation before the war in Ukraine, and the same goes for China now, unquote. It remains to be seen whether or not China will retaliate with tariffs on EU imports. One Chinese official vowed that China would, quote, take all measures to firmly safeguard the interests of Chinese companies. Humanitarian aid workers are military targets. One of the world's most dangerous professions these days is humanitarian assistance, especially in the Middle East. According to the Aid Worker Security Database, quote, despite a meticulous process in place to ensure aid worker safety in Gaza, the leading cause of death in the humanitarian sector over the last 11 months has been Israeli airstrikes. Of the 378 aid workers killed worldwide since October 7, more than 75% have been killed in Gaza or the West Bank, unquote. Sadly, these deaths have occurred despite proper notification being given to Israeli soldiers about aid missions. A senior official with Doctors Without Borders told the UN Security Council in February, quote, a disturbing pattern has emerged. Aid groups share their coordinates with Israeli authorities and then are attacked by the Israeli Defense Forces at those same coordinates. The Doctors Without Borders official said that this pattern of attacks is either intentional or indicative of reckless incompetence. In other news, the tipping point for Earth's natural systems is near. Global warming is bringing nearer the day when the crucial natural systems that regulate the environment are damaged beyond repair. A New York Times report, based on the latest scientific findings, says that these natural systems are so vast that they can stay somewhat in balance even as temperatures rise, but only to a point. Once we warm the planet beyond certain levels, this balance might be lost. The effect would be sweeping and hard to reverse, not like the turning of a dial, but the flipping of a switch. One that couldn't easily be flipped back. The systems they address are familiar to most of us. They include permafrost thawing, collapse of Greenland ice, breakup of Antarctic ice, a sudden shift in the West African monsoon, loss of the Amazon rainforest, and the erosion of coral reefs. For example, with regard to the latter, even if humanity moves swiftly to rein in global warming, 70 to 90% of today's reef-building corals could die in the coming decades. Next, a senior U.S. official questions policy in Israel. Samantha Power is head of the U.S. Agency for International Development, AID. Before taking the job, she was a crusading journalist who gained attention for her book, A Problem from Hell, America and the Age of Genocide, which argued that preventing genocide after atrocities in Rwanda and the Balkans in the 1990s should be a central concern of U.S. policy. Now, as head of AID, Power has had to deal with many employees of the agency who have been distressed and have protested over U.S. aid to what they believe is a genocidal regime in Tel Aviv. They challenged Power to put her values to work by joining their protest or even resigning. Jonathan Geyer writes in New York Magazine about Power's situation, the all-too-common problem of power versus principle. Being head of a large government bureaucracy imposes restraints, she has found. Geyer recounts this story, quote, one staffer described members of Power's team as frustrated and angry at the circumstances, sometimes coming into the office crying. The exasperation is very, very clear and evident, the staffer told me. At a town hall meeting, Power assured upset staffers that the administration was doing everything it could to cajole Israel into letting more aid into Gaza. President Biden believes that maintaining the relationship is the best way that we can leverage more humanitarian access, she said, adding that Israel must do much more to facilitate this work. Now that's the official line. Don't change policy in order to ensure access to Netanyahu, which has not turned out very well. Power supports a ceasefire, but is not about to criticize official policy publicly. Recently, Geyer reports, quote, the White House dispatched Power to Dearborn, Michigan, to defend Biden against a protest vote organized by Arab and Muslim voters incensed over his support for Israel. In a closed-door meeting with community leaders, one attendee described to me Power's moral pain about the situation in Gaza, but said that in their view, she just is powerless. And we have to keep in mind, as the author relates, that Power would be in line for Secretary of State if Kamala Harris wins election. Backlash over Europe's anti-deforestation law. A European Union regulation intended to protect the world's tropical forests has come under assault from developing countries, corporations, and major countries such as the US and China. The regulation, adopted in 2023, bans all products derived from seven key commodities: cattle, cocoa, coffee, palm oil, rubber, soybeans, and wood, cultivated on newly cleared forest land. Such a rule clearly would affect numerous household products and would require careful tracking along the global supply chain. The common request now is that the EU delay implementation of the regulation. Yet, as the New York Times reports, a few countries have taken steps along the lines of the EU rule. Quote, some countries already have monitoring systems in place. Argentina and Uruguay have been tracing cattle for more than 15 years. Ghana, one of the world's largest exporters of cocoa, has mapped 1.2 million farms so far and has said it can start tracking cocoa beans from farms to ships next month. Biden's rules on methane and mercury upheld by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court on October 4th refused to block new Biden administration rules requiring fossil fuel-fired power plants to slash emissions of mercury and other toxic substances, and requiring oil and gas firms to curb methane, a potent greenhouse gas, from their drilling operations. One other case before the court's emergency docket is a plan to curb greenhouse gas emissions from coal and gas-fired power plants. All three cases were brought by Republican-controlled states and some power generator companies. The Environmental Protection Agency says the new methane regulations announced in December will reduce emissions of the gas by 80% between 2024 and 2038. Methane, which the EPA calls a superpollutant, has 80 times the warming power of carbon dioxide during the first two decades it is in the atmosphere. It accounts for about 30% of the current rise in global temperature. Georgia's application to join the European Union is in peril. Georgia is the next European state that might vote for a far-right leadership. If it does so in elections October 26th, it will not be allowed to join the EU. That is the concerted view of EU's ambassador to Georgia, who said, quote, if Georgia becomes a one-party state, a country where political opposition is banned, where civil society must go abroad to work, and where fundamental human rights, not to mention minority rights, are not protected, Georgia will not be able to become a member of the European Union. Not today, not tomorrow, not the day after tomorrow. He appealed to Georgia's voters to vote for European values. What has gotten the EU members particularly upset is a law, similar to one in Russia, that requires Georgian organizations that receive foreign funding to register as foreign agents. That law clearly targets organizations that work with Western non-governmental groups concerned about human rights, the environment, and labor rights. Finally, the US and South Korea are close to agreement on cost sharing for US forces there. When Donald Trump was president, one of his cost-saving targets was U.S. forces stationed abroad. He demanded that the host country pay more, a lot more, something like rent, for being defended by those soldiers. The fact that security alliances also served U.S. interests was irrelevant to him. South Korea, with about 28,500 U.S. troops deployed in several bases, was one of his targets, and the matter became a serious source of controversy. Now, the Biden administration has headed off the issue by proposing that the Republic of Korea, South Korea, pay 8.3% during the first year of the five-year deal, amounting to $1.1 billion. Additional increases, capped at 5% per year, would then be applied. The South Korean parliament and leadership must approve the deal, which is highly likely since it locks in the payment issue through the next presidential cycle, avoiding the possibility that another Trump term would again raise Korea's share of the costs. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.